What's good?
Welcome back to Co-Signed. If you're new here, I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Sam. We're your hosts of this very real, raw, and hilarious podcast.
You're gonna love it.
So go ahead,
grab your snacks, your coffee, your wine,
whatever your vice is,
and let's get into it.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Hello.
Grammys were Sunday.
Yeah, they were.
This past Sunday. Can I just say, this year, I think, was a good year, or not really good. I think it was a great year for women.
Yeah.
As far as the Grammys go. Like, Beyonce received the most nominations. She had, like, 9 nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Dua Lipa, Roddy Ricch, and Taylor Swift all had 6 apiece. And then Beyonce also received the most awards. She received 4 Grammys this year, which I believe she surpassed Alison Krauss as the most awarded woman in the show's history.
So, that's pretty awesome.
Snaps for Beyonce.
Hey.
And then Taylor Swift won Album of the Year for the 3rd time, which is makes her the first woman to do so. So, that's, I mean, that's an accomplishment, though.
That's just ridiculous.
Regardless of how you feel, that's a great accomplishment. I like Taylor.
It is. I just don't
Sam
know
doesn't
how,
like Taylor.
How she got...
What do you mean?
She's
a... Regardless...
Out of all the artists...
Like we were just talking about, the Grammys are peer-nominated. Her peers must think she's doing something. So, and if you guys didn't realize, the Grammys, which we... I didn't necessarily realize, but the nominations and the Grammys are all peer awarded.
Which is pretty cool.
Right. So when I say peer awarded, so the Grammys are decided on by the Recording Academy, if you did not know, and each entry is voted on by an Academy member. These members include artists, producers, engineers, songwriters, who have a bunch of credits on a number of tracks. But this means that the awards are technically peer recognized and decided on by other professionals.
Pretty flattering if you win.
Did you watch all of it?
No.
Me either. I attempted.
I've seen some clips. I wish I would have watched all of it. To be honest, I kind of forgot about it.
Well, because it was supposed to be last year.
Right.
In 2020, and then they had to move it back.
And then the next day, I was like, shit. The Grammys.
The Grammys. But... So I just want to say, like, the fashion, or like some of the fashion, was phenomenal. Beyonce looked beautiful.
Some of it was.
Dua Lipa and her Versace, like, ugh, kill me. Like, loved it.
But Doja, what were you doing?
The hair. It was the hair for me. Really, honestly, the dress wouldn't
she
have been
pull
that.
Off the dress.
It's not that bad. The haircut.
Yeah.
Is not for me.
Right.
Like, what's the mullet? Like, I don't understand. And then who was it in the skull, like, the skeleton dress? It's not Halloween. I don't know who it was. I'll have to look it up, but...
I'm just wondering who is getting dressed for the Grammys? The And thanks, oh, this is the one.
Right.
With a big
skull.
Effing skeleton on it.
Not skull. Yeah, skeleton. Like... Shoulders to feet, skeleton. It's just, it wasn't.
But who are we, you know?
But Megan looked beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like I said,
your
Beyonce,
favorite color, orange.
Orange. So,
I thought, like you said, that was great with her skin tone. So,
How did you feel about, I'm assuming you saw Megan and Cardi's performance?
Oh, I saw it.
People are mad about it.
People are mad. Y'all can be mad. That's fine.
Yeah. Didn't you say, like, they're, like, comparing it to, like, cartoons or something?
They're comparing it to cancel culture, which is
stupid.
Ridiculous.
Which I hate anyway.
And not even relevant at all. People are saying, oh, you're, you know, we're canceling this, we're recalling this, but then two women can, you know, get up on stage and sing about wet ass. And people are just mad about it. Like, I'm like, whatever. But well, I did see something
if you're
funny.
Mad about-
I did see something that made me laugh, and I didn't look into it. Feel free to, like, comment and let us know. It was in, like, the New York Post or the Washington Post or something that people are saying that Cardi B farted during her performance.
No, shut up. Shut up.
And I don't know, like, the truth behind that. I didn't look into it any further. I just saw the headline. It was like, did Cardi B fart on stage?
The things that were
putting making what? Headlines now.
I know.
Like, what's making the, like, what's really making the news these days?
Like, who let's cares?
Like, let's, like, report on some, like, actual, like, news.
Right.
So, let's go into some of, like, the things that won versus mm-hmm. the nominees.
Right.
Right? We just said Taylor Swift won Album of the Year for her album Folklore.
Yeah.
Honestly, I know how she won and I know why she won, but, like, Post Malone's Hollywood's Bleeding and then Chalombo.
That's
like,
what I was gonna say.
And even, like, Coldplay. But, I mean, I can understand. I do like a lot of the songs on her Folklore album. But, I mean, she's just, like, dominating across genres. Yeah. I mean, she was country, then she was country pop, then she was full-blown pop. Now she's Folklore.
Okay, Taylor, we get it.
Selfish.
No, but then the pop duo group performance.
I know you were excited
I wanted to
about
do
that.
This one because my main girl. So Rain on Me, Ariana and Lady Gaga, totally deserving. But I do think the one, like we talked about, that could have went up against mm-hmm. that one that I kind of could have gone either way was Intentions with Justin Bieber and Quavo.
Which I honestly thought was gonna win.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
And just because of, like I told you, the number of times I've heard that. Compared to, but I know it's not about radio play and streams and stuff. Right. Like, this is nominated by their peers. So,
yeah.
But kudos to Ariana and right. Gaga because mm-hmm. that is a great song.
I'm so glad that Ariana got one. Deserving.
Yes. But Billy, record of the year.
I'm just
everything
that,
I wanted. That's great. Like, just snaps.
Yes.
I'm even though, like, Beyonce so and with Black Parade and then Rockstar, like you were even
yeah.
saying.
Rockstar with Roddy Ricch and DaBaby, like that's another one. But I don't know. Everything I wanted, I really love that song. And I just think Billie's such, like, an amazing artist anyways. Very, very well deserved.
Right. And I know we were asking ourselves, like, the difference between record of the year and song of the year.
Yeah.
Because to some, like, at least to me, I was like, well, isn't that kind of like the same thing? But what we read was song of the year
is for the songwriter, so it honors the songwriter. And record of the year is given to the performing artists, the producers, sound engineers, master engineer, any sort of sound mixer, everyone who would have been in a recording studio working on that specific record will then receive a golden gramophone for the award. So it's the song in its entirety.
Yeah.
So congrats to Finneas, like her brother.
Right.
Because awesome. He'd be doing the damn thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, song of the year, I'm kind of surprised.
I Can't Breathe.
Yeah.
Just compared to, like,
I'm honestly, for me,
all of the nominees, like, that's some probably one of the closest nominee, I guess, yeah. circle across the board. Because, I mean, Post Malone.
With circles?
Black Parade and The Box.
For me, I think Song of the Year, I'm shocked that Black Parade did not get that. Because that's yeah. a really, really good song.
I honestly don't know who. Because there's so many that could have possibly won that.
But my favorite new artist.
Megan
won, like, across the board.
Yeah.
Across the board deserved that.
I mean, if it wasn't going to be Megan, definitely think it should have been Doja Cat.
Yeah.
But Megan is all the way.
Yeah.
It all had, the way there.
Had to be her.
I don't listen a whole lot of Dua Lipa, but I know she won Pop Vocal Album.
Yeah,
of
I
the
don't
year.
Listen to as much of her either. Kind of surprised Changes didn't.
With Justin, I know his. And then even, like, Harry Styles' is Fine Line. Like, yeah. his songs are played everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You had said that you. Compared to some of the other nominees for Music Video of the Year, Brown Skin Girl won.
I'm
with
shocked
Drake.
It was not Life is Good.
Not that, like, I love Brown Skin Girl and I love the video and I love the song. Life is Good, I just thought, honestly, just
yeah.
it was going to win.
I did too.
But again, this is peer voted by the Grammy members,
right.
not viewers.
Right.
So, and Watermelon Sugar mm-hmm. won for Pop Solo Performance, which I was happy. I love Harry Styles.
Yeah.
Rap song, let's just.
Yes.
Savage Remix just snaps for you. Mm-hmm. I love this version of Savage.
Even though rap song, like, I could have seen Rockstar taking it too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I really do.
I'm surprised. He didn't win a single one.
I know. And I love Roddy Ricch and DaBaby.
Yeah.
So I'm just very surprised that they didn't win a single category.
One of our favorites, one R&B album of the year.
This one makes me so happy. I love this song. Yeah. So, John Legend, Bigger Love. There is no other nominee that I think should have taken that over him. Love John Legend. Great, great song. So,
and then for R&B performance, Black Parade by Beyonce won, which is...
I was very happy with that.
Snaps.
Yes, because killed it.
Yeah.
That then, music video.
I know. I love fire. It.
She just...
Just her entire, like...
Being. Mm-hmm. That horse.
And then Blue Ivy, like, she got her a Grammy. Like, mm-hmm. just go off. The whole family. The whole family's talented.
Love it.
Adopt me, please. I'll be a Carter.
And rap performance. Savage Remix. Mm-hmm. Again, with Beyonce and Megan Thee Stallion. So, that's awesome.
Deep Reverence with Big Sean and Nipsey. Pop Smoke. Or, like, Jack Harlow. I know. All of, like, these are so many good artists.
I'm surprised Jack Harlow.
That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And the bigger picture with Lil Baby.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't see that.
Lil Baby is doing it right now. And we've talked about that before. Like, I'm very surprised that he didn't win one either.
I'm just really shocked of, like, what the Grammy members voted for compared to, like, who was, like, highest in the room for rap/song performance. Like Roddy Ricch, Travis Scott,
DaBaby,
and then Drake and Lil Durk. Like, all of these, I feel like, should have won.
You're right.
Compared to Lockdown, but... And then last but not least, I put that just was kind of relevant to maybe who is listening, was Country Song of the Year. And I'm going to tell you, I'm really surprised that The Bones by Mira Morris did not win, because I've never heard Crowded Table, but The Bones is literally, I've heard, and even More Hearts Than Mine. I know you don't listen to country, but, or that much country.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like, The Bones is literally like my anthem. Like, I yell it instead of sing it in the car.
I don't know a single one of these songs.
So, I was really surprised on who took Country Song of the Year, but kudos to, I mean, just to even be nominated.
Yeah, I mean.
Is a huge achievement.
All deserving, I'm sure, even the ones we don't know of. I was just a little surprised. With a few.
And there was so many more people in so many more categories, but these were just the most relevant ones that we were interested in.
But I mean, that's interesting to me that how they're chosen, because I never knew that. So that makes a little more sense. You know, the people choosing it are listening and watching all of these songs and performances and all that stuff. So, you know.
And just to even be nominated by people, I guess, that are doing what you're doing. It is very, very flattering, like you said.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Grammys and how this was such a good year for women, I feel like, I kind of went down a rabbit hole when I was looking into information just about the Grammys and, like, the music industry as a whole. And I feel like you would find this information interesting since you do produce and you're a female. But a lot of which, I don't feel like a lot of people would know this information, but women are underrepresented in creative roles across the music industry. And just under 3%, like, basically 2% of producers in the industry are women.
That is just so which is insane crazy. To me.
But so, according to an article in Forbes, written at the beginning of 2020, I think it was like January or February, it says that women in creative roles within the music industry are still outnumbered. And according to a recent study done by the University of Southern California, researchers of this study looked at Grammy nominations. And in the 700 top songs of the Billboard Hot 100 from 2012 to the end of 2019. So that's like 7 years of information. And that female creatives are more represented in other roles, but it's not by much. So across these three creative roles that University of SoCal looked into, women make up only 21.7% of artists, 12.3% of songwriters, and 2% of producers.
That is so crazy.
So, for example, to kind of put it into like a ratio, Nicki Minaj, which, if you don't know her, what rock have you been living under?
Right.
She is one of the top female songwriters and only has about 19 credits. And again, this was done last year. But by this time, she had only had 19 song credits compared to the top male songwriter, Max Martin, who has 43 credits.
That's
basically double.
Insane.
Like more than Nicki double. Minaj.
Wow.
And she only has 19 credits. So
yeah.
Then they looked at songs individually, right? The differences are still very drastic. So, for example, 56% of popular songs have no female writer.
That hurts me.
They might have an artist, but the writer itself.
Yeah.
And then less than 1% have only one female writer. And despite the differences, women's contributions, like we said, with the Grammys, like they're still being nominated and they're still being acknowledged. And since 2013, female Grammy nominees have doubled, which is great. But yeah. the female nominees compared to the male nominees are still not huge equal. Gap. Right. And what I thought was interesting, which is the part that I felt like you would also find interesting, is these same researchers at University of Southern California interviewed 75 female songwriters and or producers to gain insight into the lived experiences of women in music. Over 30 of the 75 of their respondents admitted to their colleagues dismissing or discounting their work or skills. And they have experienced stereotyping and sexualization in the music industry.
I believe that.
25 of the 75 said that the music industry is male-dominated, which it clearly is. And only about 18 of the 75 experienced being the only woman in a recording studio. So the disparity between representation of the onstage and behind the scenes is very stark, to say the least. And out of 400 songs and 871 producers, only 2% of them were female. So for the ratio, it's about 47 to 1.
Wow.
47
to 1.
To 1. So that's you, yeah. And then 47 men.
Yeah.
So ladies, if you are interested in music,
do it.
But I feel like the perception of women is highly stereotypical and it's sexualized. And I feel like people think that women just don't have skills.
Yeah.
For some reason, like not everybody, but a lot of people do. And until those core beliefs are altered, like women are still going to face a roadblock, you know, as they navigate through these male dominated careers.
And, you know, it's kind of just like we talk about, like we were talking about WAP, the song. People were so mad when that song came out. Mm-hmm.
But why?
But men sing about that all the time. And no one even bats an eye about it.
Yep. But they still singing about female body types. They still sexualize women's body types.
Yeah.
Why can't women talk about like men's bodies?
I can sexualize my own body. It's mine.
Or your body. If you're going to do it to me, I should be able to do it about a guy. So get over it. That's what I have to say.
I know.
Get over it.
Get over it. So if we're talking about that, do you think that there's a difference in authenticity with music now versus in the past? Some feel that it's being pushed out too fast just to make money, like yeah. The factory style artist. So
a part of me says yes, and I feel like for some, like some people and like some of these artists, I do feel like it is just like to put stuff out there. And right. With other ones, I don't. Like, Cardi was, she just did, like, an interview or tweeted or posted on Instagram, you know, like, one of her little rants or something somewhere that she felt pressure. Like, she was getting mad that fans or so-called fans were getting mad at her for not releasing more music or, like, music quicker.
Right.
And she said, I don't want to just put out music just to be putting out music. Like, I want it to be genuine. I want it to be good quality music, right. Which I respect.
Absolutely.
Because there has to be pressure as an artist, male or female, mm-hmm. to constantly just, I got to stay relevant. I got to stay relevant.
Yeah.
And then you kind of almost are like, just like a robot. Puppet. Yeah, like a puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, but some of the, like, older music, like, you just can't beat it.
And you have to think, even those same people, if she was putting out a ton of music and it was garbage, they'd be mad about that, right. Too.
I'm like, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Right, you can't have it both ways.
How do you feel about it?
No, I agree with that. I mean, and also, like, these artists have families and stuff, too.
Like they're not just...
Cardi has children. Right. Like a child.
They're humans.
You know?
Like, they have lives.
Right.
Like, music is their career.
Right.
And a lot of them do, you know, eat, sleep, breathe, drink, live it every single day, but they still have other things they have to do. They're right. Just not in the recording studio all the time.
Yeah.
Making music for you just so you can, like, trash it, you know? So,
I mean, I know a lot of people think that, oh, well, they're a celebrity. They're an artist. This is what they signed up for. But they did not sign up for people to complain
right.
That they're not putting music out fast enough or to their timeline. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
We're back.
A penny.
Girl,
can you imagine?
Jinx.
Stop it.
So if we're going to talk about, like, authenticity and just how music has changed or what it is now, it's only right, I feel, like we talk about just how music has even just been put out to the masses.
Yeah.
And how it's changed. So there are very, very few forces that are more powerful than music. And we've talked about how,
yes.
I mean, you are what you listen to, I feel mm-hmm. like we said before.
And revert to a previous episode.
Right, in a previous episode. And music's very important to both of us.
Yes.
But over, like, I would say, like, the past 50 mm-hmm. years even, music has inspired fans and made artists into rock stars, mm-hmm. essentially. And it has served as soundtracks for movies and cultural revolutions. And it's compelled the masses to dance or beatbox or headbang or, I mean, if moshing is your thing. Moshing too, you know?
You've never moshed?
No.
Oh, I have one time. Won't do it again because I got hurt.
Go figure. But music's also, like, at least in my opinion, it's enlightened and enriched and enraged some, clearly. Mm-hmm. You're talking about WAPs.
Mm-hmm.
People are enraged, honey. But music also thrills young people, terrifies some parents, probably, and has even triggered congressional investigations,
yeah.
believe it or not. And it's been used as a force for unification and has been wielded as a weapon for social justice. And has informed mainstream America about the realities of communities and subcultures that they probably would not have experienced otherwise.
That's a good culture. That's a big thing.
Like, think about Tupac.
Yep.
What he used to talk about.
That's so true.
You know?
So much deep, just things that, you know, if you're a different race or you don't grow up in that type of...
If you're sheltered.
Yeah, just anything like that. Those are things that you wouldn't know if it wasn't for people creating, you know, art and music like that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, over the years, music has become a lot more personal. Mm-hmm. So once shackled to the choices and taste of, like, radio DJs that, you know, people will never meet.
Right.
Listeners now have almost total control over what they hear and what they want to hear.
When they hear it.
And especially with, like, social media and stuff. New technologies also have affected the way music is made and produced. So once held firmly in the grip of record labels that viewed artists as dollar-generating commodities, musicians today have direct access to fans who hang on their every word and note, which
right.
I've got mine on Instagram.
Right, I was going to say, we've talked about how it's just so easy to interact
mm-hmm.
and to follow your favorite artist.
And we've talked about just in the last music episode that we did how it used to be artist pages were not run by the artist.
Right.
And that's a huge culture change. And I mean, just in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Like when I was a teenager, like you would go on like MySpace and mm-hmm. stuff. And none of those pages were run by that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we talked about before, and now you've got artists on their phone recording their own stories, on posting their own pictures.
Yeah. Just that's, like a day in the life.
Yeah. Like I'm just going to tell y'all, I follow Offset like it ain't.
Does she? Oh my God. She's like, bitch, look at this. Like,
I follow like everything Offset does. I ain't even going to hold you.
But if you just like think about it, and this is like, of course, pre-COVID, but if you think about it, like music used to, like, I mean, who remembers jukeboxes? Like, and karaoke right. machines and stuff. They used to pour out of, like, and just, like, bars and clubs and
mm-hmm.
concerts. Like, I would die to go to a concert now. Like, and I can't wait until...
Maybe one day.
Yeah, I feel like it's been so long since people have, like, thrown a concert. It's really just been a year.
I know.
It feels like forever.
But, I mean, I feel like me and you, like, I went to a lot of concerts.
Yeah.
Growing up. All kinds of genres.
Yeah.
Not just one genre. So festivals, that's a big thing, like missing festivals and stuff like that, where you've just got like 50 amazing artists. There's nothing better. Nothing better.
I think like the human attraction to music is never going to change. And, you know, it's always made you want to dance or laugh or cry. Like, you know, you have those songs that just, you want a good cry. You're going to put on the song.
Oh, yeah.
Or even
movies
smile.
Too.
Yeah. Movies. It, like the sounds and the formats and the trends and technology or even instruments, you know, that are involved are always in a state of flux where they're changing constantly. There's always a new sound to sing along to or whatever the case may be, but it's right. always changing.
We're going to kind of dive into a little bit of how music has evolved. How one generation has influenced the next, what's changed in relationships among fans, producers, artists, the music they play, the way it's delivered, and how it's consumed.
So. And when we were gathering this information, like some of this throwback.
Yeah.
Like rang so many memories in my mm-hmm. head. I was like, oh my God, do you remember this? So
one of the coolest things, and I'm talking about festivals,
yeah.
Woodstock.
Oh my God.
Have you ever watched the Woodstock documentary on mm-mm. Netflix? do it. Guys, there is a Woodstock documentary on Netflix that they did. And before we go into this, did you know that basically at Woodstock, they ran out of like food?
I did know that there were so many people. They just, it was like out of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it like, the footage that they have would...
If you're younger, like too young to know what Woodstock is, I mean, one, you come have on. Google it.
Please.
Two, it's like the most famous festival in like the history of American music.
Yeah. August 15th to 18th in 1969.
Three or four days.
And it was on a freaking dairy farm in Bethel, New York. This massive property, which the documentary goes into like how that happened because they almost had to cancel it. And I remember them saying it just was way bigger than they thought it was going to be. And they didn't have enough stuff of anything. They ran out of stuff like the first day, I think it was. So the event, it says it drew nearly 500,000 people.
Half a million.
Yeah.
Half.
In 1969.
A million. Like, can you imagine? Like, Coachella could never. I mean, she's shaking in her boots.
And they said people literally hitchhiked, like, across the country to get to this.
Like, this was, like, the crowning moment of, like, the hippie movement.
Yeah.
Like, Woodstock, it's like, oh, I can't even imagine.
I honestly...
kind of like transport back there, just experience it.
I always thought that I would want to go until I watched the documentary. Yeah. Because there's some shit that went on, and you're talking about this dairy farm. These people tore this shit up, okay?
I bet.
There was trash just tore it up.
They slept out there, too.
Slept out there.
This is not like Coachella where you go to Palm Springs and you're getting houses and hotels. Like, they slept in, like, tents, did they not? Like,
some people just on the ground.
Oh, God. Well, that part, I don't wish to go to.
You know, some of the stuff that I had no idea, because I feel like Woodstock is so glamorized.
Oh, it's hippies, I would have done anything.
Yeah. But, like, I think I would have wanted to experience, like, the first day when they had stuff. Mm-hmm. Like toilet paper and stuff
it's
like that.
It's coming all over again.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the rest of it, nah, I would have probably went home.
But just going, thinking of festivals and that sort of thing, like, just transitioning to where you would actually have to go and, like, see music live, mm-hmm. like, back in that day. And then... to think about when they had, like, the karaoke machine in 1971. So just a few years after Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who do not know how the karaoke machine came about, it was basically, like, a culture phenomenon. And it was born when a Japanese businessman, I do not know how you say his name, so I'm not going to try to murder that. But he invented the karaoke machine, which translates loosely to empty orchestra. So soon bars and clubs and even business retreats began offering a platform to where every wannabe artist and pretender and weekend warrior with the courage to test their singing chops would do that in front of a crowd.
Have you ever done karaoke?
Yes.
I have too. I'm sorry for who was there.
My sister loves doing karaoke, but I mean, she can kind of carry a tune, so. But yes, have done karaoke. Drunk and sober.
Yeah.
So when you do it after a few drinks, you really don't care as much.
Right.
But when you're sober, you're like...
It's fun when you go up there with a group.
Yes.
That's what's fun.
You just don't care.
Right. Because then you're not the only one looking like a fool.
Yeah. But I just think, like, we have karaoke machines. Like, you don't even have to go to a bar for karaoke now. Like, they literally have, like, the little ones that you can have at home.
I had one.
It's dope. Yeah, my sister did, too. Yeah,
my mom bought me one for one of my birthdays. Mm-hmm. I bet they loved that they did that.
It's like a drum set.
Right. Oh, God.
This next one is really cool.
So, on August 11th, 1973, a young New York City DJ who went by the name of, how do you say that?
Cool Herc.
Okay. Threw a back-to-school party in the Bronx.
The Bronx.
Instead of playing songs in their entirety, he experimented by playing only the instrumental breaks, the part of the song that tended to animate the crowd, giving people more time to dance, which is where the term breakdancing comes from. All the while, Herc's partner, Coke LaRock, used the microphone to amp up the audience. The moment is recognized as the birth of hip-hop, perhaps the most enduring and transformative genre in American music since rock and roll.
I mean, just think, like, the people that go, what I say, who?
You right? Say, who? The hype man. It's the hype man.
Right, like, no one was doing this before.
Right.
Like, no one was, like, pointing the mic to the crowd to, like, you know.
That's so crazy to think about.
But just thinking, like, of just how music has changed. And I wasn't, I mean, neither one of us were old enough to experience the 8-track.
God.
But 8-tracks changed car travel forever. So the first 8-track tape player debuted in the 1960s, but technology enjoyed its heyday in the 1970s. Developed by Learjet, 8-track tapes used on a continuous loop of magnetic tapes to play 8 musical tracks, given the name 8-track. It was the first practical and widespread medium for playing pre-recorded and personalized music in cars without relying on a radio DJ. So cool. Before then, you just had to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Like, and this gave people the, I guess, the choice of, oh, I'm going to play this song, or this song.
You remember, like, cassette tapes, too. You remember when you had to, like, buy the special cassette tape, plug the cord into it, to plug it into this, to play, like, something you wanted to play. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I remember my brother having one of those when we were young. Another cool thing.
This is my favorite.
Vinyl records. Really dope. Vinyl records had been around for decades, but they were never cheaper and more readily accessible than they were in the 1970s, when high-quality stereo record players became nearly as common as televisions. So cassette tapes were available, but had not yet entered the mainstream, and the 8-tracks were confined mostly to cars. It was the golden age of vinyl, and the neighborhood record store became an epicenter of music, culture, art, and ideas.
I mean, just...
My stepdad had a record player.
Oh, I would love... I want, yeah. Like, I want one. And not one that you get from, like, Urban Outfitter. Like, right, I want...
like, a real one.
A real one, because, like, I'm telling you, there's just honestly nothing comparable to, like, the cracks and, like, pops of a vinyl record.
I know.
Just, like, and to think... A lot of people were deemed or, like, seen as, like, wealthy. Like, yeah. You would have, like, just, like...
Funny is it was so cheap then, and now if I walk into somebody's house and they've got some fat-ass record player with a bunch of vinyls... A
bookcase of vinyls,
like,
yeah.
Okay, this is elite.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
Like, you are top tier. Yeah. You are the main character.
I'm turned on now.
And just think, like, now... People that are waiting for music to come out, they just, like, drop it and they just, like, get it on their phone. Like, you would actually have to go and stand in line and go to an actual record store. There's not many that are left.
Have you been in one?
Mm-hmm.
They're cool. So they're cool. Really cool. They're just fun to go through.
You know what it reminds me of? One Tree Hill. Yeah. She used to go and get her records, so.
I mean, records really aren't that expensive.
No, just now. The players.
Yeah, just the players, like,
just to be able to listen to them. But if we're going to talk about how music has changed and the artists that have changed it and how it's consumed and dispersed or whatever, we got to talk about MJ himself. Mm-hmm. The king of pop, Michael Jackson. So around the time that Elvis Presley died, which was the late 1970s, Michael Jackson, if you've been under a rock, he was the boy leader of the Jackson 5. He was establishing himself as a solo performer. And the man who would then be crowned the king of pop spent the 1980s breaking sales records, redefining pop music and pop culture with dances like The Moonwalk, his Thriller video, and albums like Bad. Love Bad. And by the middle of the decade, Jackson was arguably the most famous person in the world. Probably still up there.
Yeah.
I mean, people still are absolutely. Talking about him.
You know, and
just like Prince.
There's so many
legends, if you will.
People have, you know, I know people have issues with Michael Jackson and some of the things that, you know, went on or were said to have gone on, but we're just talking about music. Will always be one of the kings.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, the dancer alone.
I mean, honestly.
Oh, my gosh.
The most comparable person now that I can probably compare to Michael Jackson's dancing, probably Chris Brown.
Yeah. And even maybe. Then, it's still not the same.
I mean, you can't compare.
I know. Another cool thing we're going to kind of go over a little bit is indie labels. When the Smiths were formed in 1982.
The Smiths.
They decided that their band would sign with an independent or indie label instead of a major record company. The likes of which had ruled the music industry for generations. So after coming to prominence in the 1970s, following decades of experimentation, indie labels like Factory, Mute, and Rough Trade, the latter of which eventually signed the Smiths, were small companies that did not have the funding or backing of the major companies. They gave emerging artists a platform to launch their careers and focus their business models on artistic freedom and mutually beneficial artist-label relationships.
Which so you get changes a little, the game.
You get a little more freedom
in
the indie label. So I could see how that would be appealing. Because major record companies...
Like, it's great. Like, yeah, I'll get more money or, you know, might get more money up front.
But you're controlled but
they,
a little
you're
more.
You're owned. Yeah. They own you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, you don't get as much of a say in certain things. So, I mean,
this down to the songs that you're creating.
Right.
Like, they have, like, I remember I saw an interview when Meghan Trainor first arose.
Yes.
She was talking how she had so many songs that she loved and she would present them to the board, if mm-hmm. you will, or her managers. And they were like, no, change this about this. And then these are songs that she was like, these are songs that I loved and poured my heart into. And just to have them ripped apart and told that, no, we don't like them. And so you right. can't release them. I can't imagine.
That sucks. Because, yeah. I mean,
you're like, what do you like?
Right.
They want everyone to be like a bubblegum pop artist.
It just takes away your individuality a lot.
So speaking of 8-tracks, and we were talking about a little cassette tapes and compact discs, the Walkman.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a Walkman?
I did.
So 8-tracks were only available in cars, right? But the Walkman actually allowed you to take music with you. It put music mobile. So first released in 1979, the Sony Walkman changed our listening habits more than any other single piece of technology in the past 40 years. As a portable transistor radio, but offering the privacy of headphones, by the time the Walkman line was discontinued in 2010, which I didn't know they were
I didn't know that either. Wow.
But by the time they were discontinued in 2010, Sony had sold over 400 million units of Walkman.
That's crazy. I did not know that they were discontinued.
Well, I didn't know. They honestly didn't realize they were still around in 2010. That was literally like only like 11 years
like
ago.
I feel like I still have mine. Maybe it's worth it.
Maybe. Maybe it's like a
throwback. I pass. I'm using my pass card. But no, going along with like the Walkmans, the cassette tapes, like we had brought up. So although the technology was first developed in the mid-1960s, cassette tapes rose to prominence in the 80s and went on to define the decade's music. So tapes were popped into Walkmans, car stereos, boomboxes, used to record songs from the radio, and even to dub tapes from vinyl records. The mixtape that became the trademark of the era's portable music made long car rides more tolerable.
I mean, people literally just would, like, let me make you a mixtape.
I know.
And people love that.
I know.
It's like when you used to, like, make CDs. Our generation mm-hmm. would, like, burn CDs.
For people.
And, like, write the songs on the face of them. Right. And you're just like, let me, like, design them. God, I have so many CDs still that
yeah.
friends gave me or I made for myself.
Yeah.
You just make your own little CD.
We were just stealing all kinds of music.
Illegal downloading. <We're not. laughs> But up until that point, so music was basically just heard in your car, and you either had to go to a record store, or you could, like, make a little 8-track or make a little cassette tape and take it with you, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it was on TV until MTV.
Yeah. Oh, my mom used to, like, ban MTV in our house.
Really?
Yes.
I love.
Now, my dad, we could do whatever we want there.
So, if you guys did not know, August 1st, 1981, Video Killed by the Radio Star became the first music video ever to air on a new network called MTV. The network changed the way music was consumed and became the voice of a generation, which MTV itself has changed a lot.
Yeah, it used to just be music.
Just music. But MTV itself launched acts like Michael Jackson, Madonna, Guns N' Roses into global superstardom before moving away from music videos in the 1990s. I mean, I would wake up on Saturday morning and be like, what's the top music videos of the week or whatever? Right. Or
it's kind of disappointing because now it's a bunch of like stupid reality shows.
Oh, well, I still like some of those shows.
Next.
But to see actual music videos on TV and just like wait until you're like for the countdown.
Your song came on. I know.
There's really, it changed the game.
Compact discs.
We talked about, right, we talked about tapes.
Discs were our generation. So the first compact disc was released in 1982. Over the next 20 years, 200 billion CDs were sold across the world.
Billion. With the B.
The technology did not use magnetic tape, but digital optical recording to embed playable tracks on polycarbonate plastic discs. The result was superior stereo sound on a light, thin, durable medium that would signal the death for cassettes. In the 1990s, the CD collection largely replaced the tape collection.
Which it did.
It did. And you remember when cars first got CD players? Like, if you had a CD player
you
in your
were
car,
it.
You were, yes.
And not all of them had them in the front. You had to put them in the trunk. It was like the 8-change disc back there. And you had to get out or like put in. There's no like, let me find a good song, let me put on this playlist. It's I better make sure I have the best 8 CDs that have ever been known, or 5 CD or whatever.
We're showing CD. Our age.
People listening, they're like, what is a CD? I
know. Now everything's just like on our phones. Yes.
Oh, God. It's like not music related, but it just reminds me of like
floppy disks.
Golly. Yeah. And if you think about it, like a lot of like we talked about with the big record labels and even radio stations. And if you're just thinking about artists and stuff, it was always like you had the artists and then you had like the songwriters.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah.
Now singer and songwriters and even women singer songwriters are taking center stage. Mm-hmm. They, like we said, there's been a drastic gap.
There's some whores in this house.
You know, but global superstars, women with booming voices, you think of Mariah Carey, you think Whitney Houston, enjoyed massive success in the 1990s. Whitney.
That's great. I know.
But the decade has also seen the rise of a new crop of supremely talented, independent, and often controversial women.
Just like we were saying.
And I love how we're just deemed controversial.
I know.
Like, you talk about one body part, and you just controversial.
I know.
Eh. The 1990s gave the world Norah Jones, Aaliyah, Sarah McLachlan, Sheryl Crow, Tori Amos, Jewel, many more. But artists like Avril Lavigne and Alicia Keys have continued this into the early 2000s. And now you think of Cardi B, and you think of Megan, and you think of Ariana.
Sweetie.
Doja. Just superstar women taking center stage. Like, we're like, no, you know what? Men have had their time on the stage.
Right.
We women, we gonna take over.
Exactly.
And I hope it just keeps continuing.
I do too. And I love that we get to live in a time where
that is possible.
That we get to see that and
experience it. And
there may be controversy, but they don't give a shit.
Right. yeah, we controversial.
Yeah, right.
And you're just gonna have to get used to it.
Right. So, auto-tune.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually didn't know that this was the history behind it.
Released in 1998, Cher's... Oh my God, Cher. She like doesn't, I think she's a vampire because she looks the same.
She doesn't look the same. Like she's definitely had some work done.
She don't look like she's in her 70s.
No, she doesn't.
Anyway, so
but I love this song.
I know. So her song Believe topped the charts in 23 countries. Exactly 36 seconds into the smash single, the world first heard what would become one of the key innovations of the past 20 years, a new pitch correction technology called Auto-Tune. Although it had existed for a year before Believe was released, Cher launched the robotic sounding voice enhancer into the public consciousness. You know, my dad has seen Cher.
Life. And live, oh God, yeah. Jealous.
Yeah.
Like, just think, if Auto-Tune was never possible, we wouldn't have, like, these different ways of making your
voice sound.
Just, yeah, just having fun on, you would just hear people singing normal.
And Auto-Tune gets a lot of criticism, but, I mean, who cares? Like,
right.
If someone, you still listening good. To the song, ain't
right.
you?
Haters, I mean, let's think about it this way. Would you want to be on a track with nothing?
Right.
Like if you were to go into a recording studio and you want people to buy your song, you gonna need a little song.
Right.
But I didn't know. Like
You feel me.
Now this was about to be a throwback. I mentioned there was gonna be a throwback here and there, and we've talked about, you know, cassette tapes and Walkmans and whatever. Napster?
Yes.
Throwback. It launched the filing sharing revolution. So in 1999, doesn't feel like, when I think about 1999 though, like in my mind, I guess because we're 90s babies, I'm like, oh, 99 wasn't that long ago.
Right.
We're literally in 2021.
I know.
It's literally like
20 years ago.
A lot of years ago. I don't want to think about it. But in 1999, P2P, which is peer-to-peer, file sharing revolution began with the arrival of Napster. Controversial service let internet users download, upload, and share music without buying it. So that was
a huge thing.
Yeah. It was shut down just a year later in 2000, probably for that reason. But Napster sent the record industry quivering, shaking in their boots, sent them into a panic, forever changing the way music was shared and delivered while giving birth to the concept of online music piracy, which is like LimeWire.
Which is, yep.
For all the 90s babies out there who put viruses on their parents' computers.
Right, because Napster might have ended, but we still had LimeWire. And I know some of y'all know about the Pirate Bay, too. Don't even play.
Oh, God. Do you realize how much, like, we illegally downloaded?
I know.
Like, that's how I made my CDs.
Right.
You know, I did, though, if I had a few artists that I would pay for. John Mayer, I always paid you for John Mayer's album. You wanted to support album.
It, of course.
But no, they were pretty much.
But like, even the LimeWire days, there were still like physical CDs that my mom would get me for birthdays or Christmas or whatever. Like, just to think that we had like actual, like something at our fingertips to like download it without buying it. You might have put 50 viruses on your computer for one song, but it was worth it.
It was. You had to find that one with the most seeds on it.
Not the seeds.
The seeds.
God, I'm having flashbacks.
You remember that? Yeah.
All with your like, to all with your dial-up internet.
Yeah.
Like, I'm using the computer. Like, my songs are finished.
So that kind of goes to, we all had them before the iPod existed. Okay.
Before the iPod.
The shitty MP3 player. I'm talking about. Okay. So, experimentation with what would become the MP3 digital audio format first began in the late 1980s, which I did not know. But it wasn't until 1999 that the recording company Sub Pop first began distributing music in the MP3 format. By the end of the 1990s, music lovers had libraries containing hundreds and even thousands of MP3 tracks, but those songs were shackled to their computers. Then in 1998, they released the world's first MP3 player. Was a big clunky Walkman-like box that offered just 32 megabytes of storage. But the game-changing transformation came in 2001 when Apple introduced the iPod. It would go on to become the gadget that defined the decade and achieve sales that likely surpassed $400 million.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Apple has continued to be just at the top of technology.
I
know. People, non-Apple users, you can come at me all day long about your Galaxy and your Google, whatever it is.
Right.
I could give a shit less if Galaxy's camera is the best. Apple and Apple storage and Apple's music library and just
the whole setup of it. The way it connects to your iMac, your iWatch, your AirPods. Like, it's whatever. Like, Galaxy which and Samsung connected don't.
I'm just kidding. But you're really not touching it. Can you tell we're both Apple users?
Right. You know how I can tell when you are not an Apple user? When your text messages are green. Like mold.
Like mold. Not money, honey. It's mold.
So to kind of jump forward, iTunes.
You're just talking about
the iPod. So iTunes. So in 2001, the same year Apple redefined music hardware with the introduction of the iPod, it also unveiled the software that would become the most important music platform in history, iTunes. It was hard to go a day without seeing someone wearing the trademark white earbuds. Yes.
The wire.
And redefined the way music was bought, sold, and shared. The iTunes store debuted... Oh my God. The iTunes Store debuted in 2003 and sold 1 million songs in its first week.
That's 1 million songs. And this isn't LimeWire. iTunes really, I mean, they get their money. You got to pay the $1.99, $2.99, whatever it was, to get each and every song, or the $14.99 for the whole album, whatever it was. They
but
did
you
that.
You know, things like iTunes and like Spotify kind of help the music industry in the way where you could just pay the monthly fee, right? Which is how it is now. And that prevents people from illegally downloading.
Yeah.
You know? So they're paying the artist directly instead of us buying each individual track.
Right. Teach their own.
Pretty smart.
But if we're going to talk about iTunes, I wanted to throw in there just how, like, different everything, like, with you have your playlist and you have subscription services and smartphones, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, SoundCloud. Like, I'm probably missing a lot of them, but there are so many different ways that music can be made.
Yeah.
And uploaded and shared and viewed and just
YouTube.
I was gonna say with YouTube and so many different ones there. We were just talking literally the other day about Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
How he
literally got famous off of YouTube.
It's crazy because it's changed so much. So many people. It's not as hard to get famous now because of the platforms.
I mean, it kind of is still hard.
But these platforms didn't exist.
Right.
And now you have ways to just
put yourself out there.
Right. YouTube videos, that type of stuff. Social media, that stuff did not exist. It was way harder to get discovered by labels.
And now, if you know, with TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and whatever else, like, it's really like if you have a lot of viewers and a lot of subscribers and a lot of followers.
Yep.
people are more inclined to be like, okay, well, what's this about? Like, people who are in that industry are going to be like, oh.
Why do they have so many likes
and follows? Right, like, people like them. Let's do something about this.
It's like that girl you send me that does the rap, like, remixes to songs that sounds like Doja Cat. Like, who are you?
She's incredible. She's dope, for real.
If you guys want to know what we're talking about or who we're talking about, go to TikTok and look up Caitlyn Raps. KTLYNRAPS. She is dope.
She is.
But if you just, like, artists are just, with these platforms, they're able to take control of their own promotions and their own publicities. Like you were saying, like, they actually run their accounts.
Yeah.
They can promote products that they like or dislike or their own merch or whatever. So for, like, generations, musicians had stapled posters to telephone poles and handed out flyers and sold tapes out of their trunks.
It's crazy.
You know, if they had the means to do so, they would hire publicists to promote their stuff. And now they're doing it themselves by podcasts, then Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and so many other different platforms. I mean, I'm sure that some of them might be on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Oh my God. LinkedIn.
You never know, but you're able to send these messages to your artist and hope and cross your fingers that they see them and respond. Or, you know, that some people get followed back by these artists.
Right.
Can you imagine Beyonce follows you? I would shit myself.
I know. It's just like all the celebrities that just tag and post company promotions. Like, they're making money just literally taking a picture with a product and tagging a company on it. When
before, they would make their money primarily on their songs and concerts, like tours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ticket sales.
And just think now with COVID, there hasn't been concerts, but these people are still making money.
They found a way.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, virtual concerts. Like,
right.
A lot of people went on Facebook and did Facebook concerts or whatever.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope.
So we just thought this would be fun. We always talk about how much we love music, and then it was very fitting. The Grammys just happened. So we really wanted to go over that, which kind of led down a deeper rabbit hole.
Rabbit hole. Like, I don't know about you, like, this was interesting to me because we do enjoy music so much. Yeah. And I mean, even if you don't find music, like, the music industry itself interesting, like, music is everywhere. And just to know, like, the evolution of it or the evolution behind it. And especially if you're, I mean, we're older. We're not old, but we were around when some of this was happening. Right. Or we've heard, like, from our parents or grandparents about some of these. And I think it's just dope just to see how far, like, technology and just the industry itself has come.
And it's funny to just look at that evolution because you're like, damn, I forgot about Napster. Like, you know what I mean?
But if you were around when these things were happening, like, it was like the biggest thing at that time.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, we have a way to like LimeWire, what?
And it's so crazy to just see how easy it is to access music now. Night and day.
I mean, just to think of like people walk around like they're boom boxes versus now they just have the tiniest little earbuds in.
I mean, it's just dope. Crazy how they can invent and connect things like that and how much it's changed. You know, we used to carry around this freaking Walkman CD player. And if you squeeze the thing too hard, the disc would stop and scratch.
Or
and,
open.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, don't it's get crazy. Your CD. Don't scratch your CD now.
Right.
It will alter it forever.
Yeah.
But if we miss anything or we brought up something that you forgot about and it gave you a little throwback feeling or memory, like, shout it out. DM us. Send us a voice message. We love those.
Or if you have an opinion about the Grammys.
Yeah. If you thought that Doja Cat should not have been wearing a mullet, like, us too. We love her. We did not love the hairstyle. But speaking of Spotify, our podcast is also on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Apple. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. Basically anywhere you like to listen to your favorites, we will be on there. It's co.sign podcast.
Yes.
Co-sign with Sam McGinn.
And we're here every Tuesday.
Right. Like we say, every Tuesday, we are coming at you with a brand new episode.
Yeah.
Your two favorite girls.
Hey. We're pretty funny.
Yeah. We think so. All right, guys, we will see you next week.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.